You're listening to Proven Perspectives, a podcast with John Hawkins, the founder of Leadership Edge Incorporated. I'm Laura, John's daughter, and in each episode, we will explore a topic related to life, leadership, or mentoring. Through nearly 50 years of faith in Christ, John has learned proven life and leadership perspectives that will equip listeners for a lifestyle of leadership in their marriages, families, careers, communities, and churches. Hey, Dad.
Laura, how are things in beautiful Orange County, California today?
Things are good. And I've been thinking, it's been a while since I've asked you, what are you cooking lately?
Oh my gosh. You would think I've gone on strike. I have not cooked much of anything. I did cook some scallops and shrimp the other night.
How did you make the scallops?
Oh, it was kind of in a very unhealthy, like butter bacon kind of sauce.
Ooh, that sounds very delicious.
Very rich, but very. But this Saturday, I am, Lord willing, I am making 11 pies and one cake.
Oh.
For Thanksgiving desserts for friends.
How cool.
We have a dear friend who I know you know of, Laura, James Heinrich. And James was a real estate agent who was a dear friend of ours who passed away a month or two ago.
Yeah.
And every Thanksgiving, he would give away literally hundreds of pies to friends as Thanksgiving gifts. And so I can't give away hundreds, but I am going to make...
If you started now.
Yeah, I am going to make 11 for this Thursday or this weekend, so it will be ready for Thanksgiving that's coming up.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Okay, well, without further ado, why don't you introduce our topic for today? It's going to be a fun one with fun guests.
Well, we have a great topic, a little bit different, and once we say the topic, you'll be very glad to know that we do have guests.
Yeah.
Because Laura and I know nothing about this topic. Our topic today is Christian perspectives on cybersecurity. And we think that's such an important topic these days with just all the hacks and just the crazy things that are happening. And for people like me and Laura who just don't understand that, it's good to have friends who do.
Yeah.
And so we've got two wonderful guests with us today. We've got Luke Ducharme with us, and then we have Seth Hammond. I have been friends with Luke for a number of years now, and I've been friends with Seth for probably, I don't know, maybe decades now. It's been a long time. They're two men and brothers in the Lord that I hold with high regard, and I'm so glad to be able to have them on with us. Both of them were mentored through Leadership Edge, and Seth has been a Leadership Edge mentor now for a while at the university that he works with. So I'm going to turn it over to Seth and Luke. I want you to just tell us a bit about who you are and about how you came to faith in Christ. And Seth, why don't we start with you, and then Luke will go to you after Seth.
Sounds good, John. First things first, you do have my current address, right, for that pie you're sending this week?
Well, no, we have no takeout orders. It's only to local neighbors and friends. But you know,
I understand.
Maybe that'll happen sometime. We'll see.
I understand. Well, coming to faith in Christ, when I was young, I think I was about the age of 10. A cousin who's a pastor, about 20 years older than I am, he shared with me the gospel message.
Yes.
And you know, I think at that moment the veil was lifted. Mm-hmm. And I got a glimpse of a supernatural reality, you know, kind of the reality behind the physical reality that we observe, that my state before God wasn't good. And that I had stood condemned, you know. Yes. So when I think back now, well, that was 20 years or 30 years ago. You know, what did I know? I mean, I'm 10 years old. I knew nothing about theology or the world. But in that moment, I grasped something that I can still affirm today as a reality, a truth. And really, the gospel is simple. It's this idea that apart from the substitutionary atonement,
yes,
and the perfect life that Jesus Christ lived on our behalf, we have no hope. We don't stand a chance. We can't talk our way out of all the ways in which we've defied God and we violated his order And so, yeah, that's how I came to faith in Christ. The Lord has had his hand on my life, and certainly in my college days at Duke University, that was a huge time of personal growth for me.
Yeah. And so tell us, Seth, just a little bit about what your life is like now, like married, family, career, kind of all that.
Yeah, I'm married to my college sweetheart, Emily. Yeah. We met at Duke University, and we've been married since she graduated. I'm 2 years older than she is. We've been married since 2004. When I graduated, though, I did a couple of different things, but one of them was I was a consultant, and I was in technology consulting. Eventually, Emily and I had children. We have four today. We have a 9-year-old, 7-year-old, 5-year-old, and 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. And about 9 years ago, I got into higher education. So today I'm a teacher. I teach at Cedarville University, which is in a rural area of Ohio near Dayton. And I run our cybersecurity program here. So I'm the director of the Center for the Advancement of Cybersecurity, and I'm an associate professor of cyber operations and computer science.
Man, that's amazing. That's cool. And Luke, tell us about you. Tell us about who you are, how you came to faith, what all kind of the two-track life you have right now. Just tell us who you are.
Sure, John. It's kind of similar to Seth. I came to know Christ at a young age. I was very fortunate to grow up with parents who know and love the Lord. And I think I formally accepted Christ when I was about 8 or 9 at my grandparents' kind of vacation cabin at the time in the Rocky Mountains. And ever since then, it's been kind of learning what that decision means on a daily basis and learning who God is and who I am in relation to him and as his son. That's cool. So, yeah.
And then what do you do now?
So I do, like you said, I'm kind of living a bit of a two-track life. So I'm a part-time student, finishing up my undergraduate degree in cyber operations from the University of Arizona, an online degree program there. And I'm a cybersecurity research scientist at Wells Fargo on their offensive security research team.
So, Laura, I think we've got the right guest for today if we're learning about cybersecurity.
You sound like experts to me.
That's right.
So, Luke, tell us a little bit about, like, what drew you into cybersecurity? How did you, come to the role that you're in now?
Sure. So I started getting interested in cybersecurity probably in middle school because I thought the idea of being a hacker was really cool, but I didn't know what that meant. So my initial research yielded that hackers know how to program. So I started looking into programming a little bit and messing around with C, which is a programming language. And then towards the end of my high school career, I was actually split between cybersecurity and medicine and wanting to pursue one of those in my undergraduate career. But as you probably know or could guess, there isn't much overlap between those two options. So I knew I had to make a decision, and I talked to some professionals in both those fields and shadowed some people. And as a result of an internship that I did, I ended up decided to go with cybersecurity, and I've felt like the Lord guided those steps, and have enjoyed a lot of experiences with it.
Very cool. And so what's your current role?
So I'm a cybersecurity research scientist with Wells Fargo.
Uh-huh. And so that's kind of researching, like, threats, or what do you do with that?
Yeah, so one of the ways that cybersecurity can be described is in terms of offensive security or defensive security. And the end goal of both those things is to protect, secure an organization's cyber infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a part of the offensive side, which typically in a variety of ways simulates cybersecurity threats against the organization's defenses in a way that finds vulnerabilities and weaknesses and opportunities to improve those defenses.
Yeah. Wow. Awesome. Well, I'm certainly glad that you're doing that. So, yeah. And so, Seth, can you tell us, like, what drew you into cybersecurity professionally?
Well, when I started teaching at Cedarville, I only had a master's degree, so I knew that I needed to get fully credentialed, and I was going to be entering a PhD program specializing in something in computer science, and I had always been interested in cybersecurity. And meanwhile, our program here was looking for kind of a niche, something that we could kind of do, you know, as a specialty area. Mm-hmm. And one of my mentors here, our most senior computer science professor, suggested that I study at the Air Force Graduate School, which is located near here at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and that they have an incredible cyber program there. And why don't I just research cyber and kind of learn how they teach cyber and then bring it back to Cedarville? And so January 2013, unlike Luke, who I think had this kind of tuned in from a young age, in January 2013 is when I started studying and investing in cyber, and I've learned a lot in those years.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. Well, and I think that's so helpful because few, if any, of our listeners are cybersecurity professionals. So like you said, you know, you just kind of, I guess both of you did this, but kind of started learning more and more. Give us some practical examples like of what cybersecurity is and why it is important.
Yeah, I can start on this. I think, you know, we think about physical space and then think about cyberspace. And so anything that we enjoy about physical space in terms of privacy and security, as we move more and more of our life online, and as our you know, economy and our society becomes more dependent on our cyber infrastructure, it's just basically anything that we do with computers, phones, etc. We want to make sure that our property is protected, you know, our privacy is maintained.
Yeah.
And that's one way of describing what cybersecurity is all about. And so and it becomes more important all the time because we're increasingly dependent, you know, especially with this pandemic, with telehealth and telecommuting and telelearning or all those things. I mean, again, just more and more dependent, and we're putting more of ourselves out there in cyberspace. And
sure,
so
yeah.
We value our privacy and the protection of kind of our property, which is really just data. And so that's what cybersecurity professionals do.
Yeah, well, that's interesting that you brought in just how coronavirus and, some of this year has even intensified the need for cybersecurity with so much of our lives happening online. I hadn't really thought about that connection. Yeah, Luke, do you have any thoughts on this to add?
Sure, yeah, I think Seth covered it very well. And one thing that I might add is that security is often a balance between convenience and security. So hypothetically, you could, you know, take your computer and you dunk it at concrete and bury it 10 feet under the ground, and you know, it'd be perfectly secure.
Yeah.
But that's unusable. So it's a balance between, you know, what is the most secure that we can be, but still have, you know, the level of convenience that allows us to, you know, do the different things that we want to do online.
You know, when I think about cybersecurity and cyber terrorism, especially when I'm thinking about more like personally, so not like on a grand scale of, you know, did some country hack our election, you know, but for me personally, it just becomes like a dark hole for me of like fearsome, oh my gosh, this is going to happen and I'm going to lose all our money out of our savings account. Or it's just like this dark hole of fear. So for someone like me, a Christian like me, ideas on how I can adjust my thinking about that, because that's not a particularly faith-centered way of thinking about it. And it doesn't really get me anywhere good. So, Luke, I'm going to throw that one on you first. Like, for someone like me who just thinks, oh my gosh, this is horrible, and I'm going to get sucked in some way, and we're going to lose all our money or something, what should I do differently? How should I think differently, Luke?
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the biggest things is starting to get more informed. And I think some of the ways you can do that is a lot of media and news agencies have technology sections or report on cybersecurity issues. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, reading those and the experts that speak in them, there's a variety of podcasts that talk about cybersecurity things as well. In addition to this one. So I think that is one of the strongest things that you can do is becoming more informed, because you're likely to be more fearful of what you don't know. And then as you become more informed, you'll be able to understand, you know, what is a realistic risk or threat that we face. And, you know, some of those things will be in your control, and, you know, personal measures that you can take to secure yourself and or your family. Mm-hmm. And then some things will be outside of your control. And those are the things that you'll need to learn to trust God with, and understand that he is in control over those things.
That's good. Seth, anything you have to drag me out of my dark hole of fear and despair?
I really like Luke's answer about getting educated to the point where you have just a comfort level with what risk you're actually accepting and taking on. And, you know, I think that's part of being a steward and a good steward, and making that investment, maybe through doing podcasts like this or reading a little in the news. And so doing your part, and then, as Luke also mentioned, then let God do his part.
Yeah.
And, you know, we accept risk all the time, and we live our lives still knowing that bad things can happen. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you do a little bit of self-education, you figure out how to be a good steward, and then you kind of are more comfortable being aware of maybe what's a good decision, what's a bad decision, and then the decisions you make, leaving in the Lord's hands and trusting him for the outcomes.
That's really helpful, Seth. So, Seth, you did something recently, or maybe in a couple of years ago, I don't know, but is a TEDx talk that you did on cybersecurity and character. And that was, when you told me about it, I was fascinated, because, again, I'm this old guy who thinks cybersecurity is about this dark hole of fear, and you're talking about linking it with character. And I don't even usually listen to TED Talks, but I was really on that one because I was really interested in how kind of the message you had in that. So could you just take a minute or two and just summarize what were you saying in that TEDx talk?
Oh, thanks, John. That was a pleasure for me to do that talk. And, you know, I'm coming at it from a Christian perspective. And a big part of my day job here at Cedarville, we're a Christian university, you know, unabashedly. And so every student that comes through here gets a Christian perspective on no matter what they're learning. And so anytime I teach computer science or cybersecurity, I must make sure that what I say aligns with Scripture, and that I'm also, you know, pushing our students to honor the Lord with the ways that they're learning and things that they're going to be doing. So it was natural for me to think about the integration of my faith in cyber. Mm-hmm. But then to do that in a way that I could deliver a secular TEDx talk. Yep. So that was a challenge for me. You know, I wanted to put my faith forward in a secular context, and certainly TED prohibits any kind of proselytizing or straight, you know, evangelistic mm-hmm. messages or anything controversial for that matter.
Yeah.
So I kind of signal right at the beginning. I say, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's my opening line of my talk.
Yeah.
And I started talking about, so physical space came into existence, and then I talk about how then later, much later, just recently, cyberspace came into existence. Mm-hmm. And then I say, kind of provocatively, you know, we read in the news about all this cyber insecurity. Where does this come from? What have we ever thought, like, why? What's going on in cyberspace where we're here in the news stories all the time? Mm-hmm. And so at kind of a really abstract level, I put forward a few ideas about what makes cyberspace kind of fundamentally insecure. Mm-hmm. And then I pivot in the talk and I say, okay, given this, who do we want to be our defenders? And actually my talk is called The Guardians of the Cyber Galaxy. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, who are these superheroes? What do we want to look for in them? And I make the case, kind of the last maybe quarter or third of the talk, in that we should be looking for character. because cyberspace is a dark world. And, you know, a lot of virtue is just lack of opportunity. And in cyberspace, what we see is temptation and opportunity walk hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to look very far to see that that's been playing out. That plays out in individuals' lives, and that plays out in cybercrime and in all kinds of ways. And so John Wooden once said, you know, your character is who you are when no one's looking.
Yeah.
And I like to put a modern day spin on that. And this is how I close my TED Talk. And I say, you know, maybe today we could better say, and this is all for us to self-reflect. Maybe it's better said your character is who you are in cyberspace. You know, as you navigate this world and you face all these temptations and you have this kind of thought, whether it's real or not, that you can get away with it. No one really knows what you're doing out there. Clearly, that's not true before God.
Yeah.
And it may not, in fact, be as true as you think, even you know, in the technology.
Yeah.
But the point is, if we don't have character, we may be tempted to make expedient choices.
Yes.
And things that can harm us and harm others. And so, especially with our professionals, who we kind of have to turn, you know, like Luke, you know, you kind of have to give him the keys to the kingdom if he's coming into your organization.
Yeah.
You lay everything bare to him. You won't really be able to tell what he did or didn't do. You just need to trust him.
Yeah.
So he better be trustworthy.
That's so good. And give us the title of that again so our listeners could look that up.
Absolutely. It's called Guardians of the Cyber Galaxy.
Okay, and they can just look on YouTube for that, is that right?
Yeah, I think if you just type it in Google, it should come up, or if you type in my name, Hammond, it comes up, and it's on TED, the TED website, and there's also a YouTube link to it.
Great. Well, I recommend it highly.
Yeah, that sounds like a great first step. Like, one thing that I hear both of you saying is maybe a first step for someone who doesn't know a ton about cybersecurity, like myself, would be just becoming more educated. So it sounds like maybe, I mean, your TED Talk would be a great way to start that. So I wanted to ask both of you, and Luke, let's start with you on this one. Can you give us some more practical advice on actions that we can take to protect ourselves and our families from cyber threats? Like, you know, I know there's, you should be changing your passwords really consistently and using different passwords on everything. Like, but are there maybe some simple things that we can do, or what do you recommend to keep us and our family safe?
Sure. So one of the first things I recommend when I get this question is using a password manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like you mentioned, it is good security practice to use different passwords for each login or site. And so, you know, and because we have, you know, probably hundreds of accounts, storing all that information in your brain and being able to remember it and use it well isn't practical. And so there, a number of companies have developed what are called password managers, and, you know, some of the popular ones are like 1Password or LastPass or Bitwarden. And what these are is they're secure databases which you have a master password to. So you create one secure password that you need to remember, and then you use that to decrypt your database, which contains all the other passwords for your accounts. And what that does is it allows you to use different passwords for each login, and it also contains a password generator that automatically generates secure passwords for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you know, typically if you're not using something like that and you have a account that you don't use very often and you need to go use it, you know, typically you have to either try and guess the password or do the forget password and dig around for it. Yeah. So one thing that it eliminates that because it has your password safe for you.
Yeah.
And the reason you should use different passwords for each login is because if an account or a company gets compromised as a data breach, which is, you know, very likely that they will have if they will have in the future if they haven't already, or they have and they just, you know, haven't talked about it, is that if your password is revealed in that breach, then what cyber criminals or other threat actors will do is they'll take that login information of all the people and try them and, you know, other monetary, you know, for monetary gain in other places, yeah, such as bank accounts or, you know, social media accounts. And if you're reusing that password, then they'll likely guess it and, you know, get access to your other accounts. So with a password manager and having a unique password for each site, you'll only be compromised on that, you know, that one business temporarily until you can change your password.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Okay, thanks. And then Seth, let me direct like kind of the second part of this to you. So I know you have several kids, so I know you've been probably thinking through these things. I'm sure you have. Do I need a VPN, or like how can parents be proactive with their kids' exposure on the internet?
Yeah, that is something we think about at my home. Well, I think we need to thoughtfully engage ourselves personally, you know, the type of technologies we use in our home, and certainly the amount of technology we allow our children to use. This isn't necessarily cybersecurity, but I think you should invest in some kind of filtering, which could prevent even, you know, unintentionally a child seeing something they ought not see. You know, kind of like an accountability type of a software. I don't have one to recommend, but you may know some of those.
Yeah.
A VPN, probably not necessary. It would be necessary if you were worried about someone eavesdropping on like kind of what sites you're visiting. Most sites today have that little S at the end, like HTTPS, which means that the traffic is encrypted between your computer and the destination server. So if it's intercepted en route, it's just gobbledygook. You know, the person can't read it. Now, they could tell where you're going and what sites you're visiting.
Okay.
So that could be a reason. Or if you're on a, you know, if you're not on your home network, if you're out at a hotel or at Starbucks or something and you're just at a Wi-Fi network, it could also be a good idea to use a VPN. What that does is it creates an end-to-end encryption point between you and whomever your VPN provider is.
Okay.
And so it just means that literally everything your computer is doing that's connected to the internet, yes, it still does have to go through Starbucks and out onto the ISP and over the wires, but it's essentially like you have a point-to-point connection with your VPN, and everything you do goes there, and it's totally veiled. Anybody that is trying to observe your traffic would know that you're communicating to a VPN, but that's it. That's all they would necessarily know.
Okay.
So that's kind of more of a privacy thing. I don't know if it would really be relevant to kids. And I want to follow up on something Luke said, just to share some good news with you.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to change your password every 3 months.
Really?
I don't think that's really helpful. In my opinion, that guards against kind of, if a password's been compromised and someone is kind of like surreptitiously spying on you, you know, and like they're maybe logging into your email, but they don't want you to know they're logging into your email.
Okay.
And that could happen, and that does happen, you know, with, you know, sometimes on the dating scene or other areas that could be a possibility. But most of the time, if someone finds your password, they're going to use it, and you'll know that you've been compromised.
Okay.
So
that's great to know.
Hey, Seth, I want to throw in one real quick. So how do you and Emily handle when you are sharing a password, say like to your bank account, and you both are using it? Like Janet and I, it seems like we are parentally, she can't remember what the password is, or I can't remember what the password is. And we don't have that on like a password manager.
Yeah,
both of us are sharing. So, any thoughts on how to do that?
Yeah, and so with the cloud-based password managers, there is a way to kind of share access or certain, you know, even for individual accounts to share with your family. And I think Luke can probably talk to that better than I do. I'll tell you what Emily and I do. We have an old school password manager, and we save it in a cloud account. That is an account that we can both access from anywhere on the internet.
Gotcha.
And then we share it. And so it's kind of like in a Google Drive. And so if she creates a new account, she's and we both know the password to our password manager.
Okay.
And so it's a low tech, honestly, it's a low tech way to do it. I think with these like LastPass or something like that, which is a cloud-based password manager, it's much probably works a lot better, but we're deeply entrenched and kind of we've been doing it this way for years and it works for us.
Well, we definitely have some interesting moments in the Hawkins home when when one of us couldn't remember the password, and so we changed it, and then the other one doesn't know what it is. So maybe this is more a second podcast on marriage counseling or something. I don't know.
Laura,
let me throw it back to you. I just wanted to ask that one.
No, well, I feel like, I mean, I have a lot of other questions too, and I know we're tight on time, so maybe we'll have to do a second part another time. But one thing I wanted to get both of your perspectives on, and we'll go back to Luke on this one. As we wrap up, can both of you share any last thoughts on how our faith in God should shape our thoughts and behavior related to cyber threats? Luke, will you start us off?
Sure. So I would reiterate the importance of, like Seth mentioned earlier, being a good steward of your assets and activity in cyberspace, and also when it comes to thinking about cyber threats, realizing that you know, God is in control of those things, and you know, He will remain faithful to you and continue to take care of you regardless of what cyber threats we face.
That's great. Yeah, Seth, what about you?
Yeah, I would just add to that about just thoughtfully engaging technology. You know, there's a saying in technology and in cybersecurity and in privacy, I guess, that if you don't pay for the product, you are the product. And to just kind of keep that in mind, you know, how much of your privacy are you divulging and at what cost? And it's probably not readily apparent, you know. So that's one thing to think about, and that'll potentially reduce your cyber footprint, which will reduce your cyber risk. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that'd be one thing that I would add. And then, yeah, the stewardship thing. One of the things that didn't come up in the last question that I think is really effective, passwords, we found out in cybersecurity, passwords are not great. They don't work very well. They're the root of all kinds of cyber insecurity. But we're kind of stuck with them, at least for the time being. But to have a multi-factor authentication, that can really help. So then you're not solely dependent on your password to authenticate yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's relatively easy to impersonate somebody by knowing their password, guessing their password, finding their password written down or whatever. But when you have multi-factor, that means you're also authenticating with something you are, like a thumbprint or something like that, or something you have, like your phone. And so if you have an account that you're really worried about, part of being a good steward is probably, well, put something on that account, like, use a good password for sure, but add Duo or some other kind of multi-factor authentication mechanism, and you will no longer be low-hanging fruit for the cyber criminals. I mean, you're not guaranteed to be safe. Nothing's guaranteed in cybersecurity, but you've put yourself in another echelon of security if you take that step. And what Luke said right at the very beginning, you have caused yourself some inconvenience. Hopefully it's minor and probably it's worth it. But that is true, and that is part of it. But in this case, it's worth it.
Yeah, no, guys, thanks so much. I feel like there was so much helpful information from both of you. I think like one of my takeaways was just part of being a good steward of what God has like given is being informed. And I think that this podcast is a great next step, at least for me. Dad, do you want to wrap us up? Any final thoughts from you?
Well, I feel hopeful. And so that is good. I do appreciate what Seth and Luke do. Mm-hmm. I think that it's so important for Christians to really be involved in all levels in cybersecurity and combating cyber terrorism. And it's so encouraging that here are two men who, as the Leadership Edge personal vision statement would say, by God's grace are stepping forward as God's men in their spheres of influence to serve God's purposes for God's glory. And so greatly encouraged by Luke and Seth, what they do, how they live their lives, and have really learned from the time with them. So listeners, we hope this has been of benefit to you. Also want to encourage you that if you're interested in Leadership Edge mentoring, which is a lot of what is done through Leadership Edge, you can always go to our website at www.lead-edge.com, and you'll find there plenty of resources on mentoring, and especially how you can sign up for our next public mentor training program. So that's all I've got. Laura, I'll throw it back to you.
Okay, thanks, Dad. And thanks so much, listeners, for joining us.
Listeners, if you would like to find out more about John's thoughts on life, leadership, and mentoring, please go to the Leadership Edge website at www.lead-edge.com. Or if you have questions or ideas of topics for future podcasts, please reach out to us at lai@lead-edge.com. We look forward to hearing from you.